Good evening, everybody. Happy Friday, and welcome to this most special of Emergency Line of Vienna Suite podcasts. We had planned on recording after the weekend when Wanderers faced Gillingham, but events have overtaken us today, and we will come to those very, very shortly. But these are unusual times in which we live in, guys. So I'm very pleased to be joined tonight to discuss those times by James, our resident tech guru. James, good evening, mate.
Evening, Chris. How are you, bud?
Yeah, all fine. Thank you, all fine. And then making his triumphant return is none other than Tom Jenkins, erstwhile host of this very same podcast. Tom, welcome back.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you. I'm very upset that you took my job, but it does mean that I had to do a lot less preparation for this.
Well, put it this way, pretty much everyone could do more than I'm doing at the minute. But then again, we do tend to manage to swing through it. But I do miss the structured days of the Jenkins era. But perhaps we'll get there one day once you've finished building a life for yourself down in London, which I hope is going very well.
Yeah, so, it's going all right, mate. Cheers.
So, in order to keep things neat and tidy, we will just quickly gloss over the last couple of results, primarily because we lost them both heavily, but also because of, I think, the events of today, which we'll come to in a few minutes, are more pressing and of more interest. First and foremost, Wigan game at home. I think we all rocked up there mildly confident. James, would you say, I wouldn't say I was there absolutely buzzing, I would have taken a point beforehand, but flipping it, we absolutely tated.
Yeah, no, I wasn't buzzing either, because we had a limp performance against them in the cup, but that was both of our second teams. I mean, I know we had a couple players from our backup team who played in that game, but even then, you still think some of the players that we have starting, you think they could do a job, but how wrong we were, and especially how wrong I was, considering that I felt I was probably a bit more confident than you were heading into that. So yeah, it was
indeed.
We got thoroughly humbled, and it showed on everyone's faces.
Indeed, we went into the game on the back of Ian Evatt's bluster, shall we call it, horseshit we might call it, that we were the best team in the division. Granted, we'd had a few half decent results and some good spells in those games, but crikey O'Reilly, Tom, he's got a gob on him, hasn't he?
He does, and the problem is, what's fueling that gob are the gobs of other managers, in terms of Darren Moore saying we're the best team that they've played this season, Paul Warren saying that we're the best team that Rotherham have played this season. Was it, I can't remember, there was another one who said something similar to that. It might have been Adkins at Charlton or something like that.
Sunderland, well,
yes,
it was Johnson.
Yeah, you're right. And they're always going to be very, very positive about us because they beat us. That makes perfect sense. I was at Sheffield Wednesday and we did play very, very well. We just couldn't score for love nor money, and we couldn't have scored if we'd have continued playing right until the start of the Wigan game. And that worried me. But it was the kind of performance, if you remember last season when we were undeserved drawers at Bradford, when Danny Rowe got that last minute goal, having absolutely pummeled them all game and deserved to win that match if we'd have managed to hold on to that one goal lead. We then responded by blasting Cambridge out of the water, and they were obviously, you know, very, very good side in that division. So I was kind of hoping that, you know, with it being a derby, with it being that this is really pissing us off, we need to go in there and put this right, you'd have thought that it might have come out in a different way. But, you know, McLean tore Brock back to pieces, the midfield was MJ Williams versus whoever, and the two centre-halves decided to both have off days when previously it's been one of them exceptional and one of them maybe on an off day. And it all just culminated in a horrific performance. And the thing is, it's the third time now, I would say, that we've played in a match where we played someone that our fans genuinely dislike and really want to beat. And Evatt has failed on all three occasions. And it does irritate me that, despite all of his bluster, he can't seem to get his players psyched up for a big derby game.
It is definitely concerning. And having a Wigan supporting gaffer at work, it makes things all the more real when you turn up on Monday morning.
Because if you went to, that's a mistake.
I had booked myself a day off, my final day's leave of the year, and I did arrive in to an email with emojis, which sickened me in many ways. But there we are. He's a much finer person than that. I'll give him some credit, despite his footballing leanings. But no, it was an incredibly disappointing performance. And for me, the writing was on the wall in the first 5 minutes before they even took the lead. They just looked faster, stronger, better than us in every single position. And I know, James, I'll just come to you on a little word on this before we move on to the next game, but for all the jip that McLean gets, Christ almighty, can you imagine him and Dapo on opposite wings playing for us? That'd be absolutely a sensational partnership.
Yeah, well, maybe it was possible, but nope.
Wasn't to be.
It wasn't to be, and he probably would have gone down like house on fire with some members of our fan base anyway, but...
The same members of the fan base didn't exactly shower themselves with the same amount of glory that they showered the pitch with.
It was a disgrace.
A word or two on them, please, from you, mate.
I'm trying myself not to get too angry, because some of the Wigan fans as well did the exact same thing that our stupid fans did at their ground, which was rip off signs off them, chuck them down when they could have easily clattered someone in the back of the head when they were dropping from the upper tier to the lower tier. So that was really stupid of them. But what were our fans thinking, just constantly showering bottles down onto the pitch? I genuinely cannot understand that thought process. What the fucking hell were they trying to protest? Like, we were really shit. We can do that. We got thoroughly humbled. But is that really the way to let out your anger? I mean, for Christ's sake, Doyle and that were our young fans. They were telling them to stop. And yet, idiots there in the quote-unquote crazy corner just had the insistence to keep going. I don't know, they've not revealed the details of the fines, but we've probably been fined heavily for that kind of thing. Hopefully everyone who was throwing shit on the pitch has been removed from that stadium, because I've got no patience for them, and neither should the club. It's just an embarrassing look for us all around. It just added to the further humiliation that we got that day. So it was thoroughly unneeded, and I'm trying not to get too enraged, but
you've done a fine job.
I really hate our fans sometimes.
Yeah, and humiliation is a fantastic way to describe the whole entire afternoon. It was a colossal waste of time, and fingers crossed it's the low point of the season. But in the midst of low points, we travelled to a long trip to Plymouth on Tuesday night. Backed by a decent number of fans. I think it was 600-700, from what I recall from reading online, to see us face Plymouth. Plymouth, who, of course, are playing well at the minute. They're managed by Ryan Lowe, who was allegedly up for the job before Everett took over. Ex-Berry boss, of course. And fair to say, God, we had a very poor start again. And before we knew it, the heavens opened, it were 3-0, and events in the behind off the pitch that we weren't party to at the time were playing out. Going into that game, Tom, were you confident that Wanderers could bounce back from the heavy defeat against Wigan, bearing in mind that we were missing Jones and Santos, to name but two?
I think that's the thing. Normally, after such a humbling performance, as you guys have described it, and it's a very apt description, there's a bounce back. I think good friend Alan Nixon was saying on Twitter in the prelim to the game, which nobody could believe, that he backed us to come back with, you know, some kind of performance, or maybe get a dogged 1-0 or something in the crappy weather. But no, I think it was just perfectly set up for Plymouth to, on their own pitch, which, even if it is, you know, in farcical condition, you're always more likely to be able to adapt to those conditions better if you're at home. They just took advantage of a very, very sickly and weak team who went down there. It wasn't us. It wasn't the side that we're capable of putting out. And it just, you know, just spoke volumes to the fact that squad depth is a huge issue for the club, really. Our first 11, I am confident, could beat anybody in this league. It's proven that it can compete with anybody in this league so far. But, you know, in farcical conditions, and that third goal just showed how ridiculous it was towards the end. You know, if that game had kicked off maybe, I don't know, 20 minutes later, you probably would have considered possibly calling it off if it hadn't been so one-sided. It was just a game that you need to just scrub from the memory banks, move on from. And we'd love to be able to move on from it. But as you've alluded to, Chris, you know, the events that transpired, what we presume to have transpired afterwards, mean that, you know, that's going to possibly be a turning point in this season.
Indeed, and we'll speculate wildly on that in a few minutes.
Oh, yes, I look forward to it. My imagination's running wild.
But James, back to you before we get to that point. Obviously, he came into the game, Everett, switching things up. He was without Jones and Santos for injury and suspension reasons. Doyle and Sarcevic missed out in the starting 11. How surprised were you on Tuesday night to see him make that particular change and get my teeth back in?
Well, Sarcevic I wasn't as much as surprised with, because the excuse given at the time was that he was playing injured. We probably know why now, why he wasn't playing, but at the time I thought, yeah, if he's playing injured, I can see him being rested. Long trip to Plymouth, other players coming back better than him. You know, Thomason made a decent impact when he enough impact when he came on at Wigan. I thought maybe he'd be given the chance, but no, we had Kieran Lee back. Doyle, maybe more surprising than Sarsfield being dropped at the time, because he's been desperately out of form. The lad's not, what is it, like 10 games now he's gone without a goal or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Along those lines, it's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, for especially when you're supposed to be a goal-scoring striker. So seeing him dropped for Bakayoko wasn't the most surprising thing in the world, but considering how Everett's usually been quite loyal to Doyle, I suppose it was sort of surprising. But really, outside of that, it was mostly the team I was expecting. And again, it's just we just deserved to get... to get bullied, not as much as it was against Wigan, but we were clearly outclassed, and we just same old problem. Whenever we go behind, we just don't seem to have that impetus anymore to properly get back into the game. We keep fannying around too much, passing too much around the back, trying to create that perfect Wenger ball style goal, and it's just not happening for us. We need extra options. We need to think a bit more positively, you know, work harder, because our midfield is barely linking up with anyone at the moment. There's just a lot of issues that need addressing, and whether that's going to be solved with bodies or whether that's going to be solved with just finally getting that goal that we need and kicking us up the arse, I don't know. But it all needs addressing, and especially on the training ground and in games. I just want to be positive again, because these last 2 weeks this last week or so has dragged me down to the point where we were under Keith Hill, or when we were in absolute dog shit in the Championship, and I don't want to be feeling that way on our podcast. It's nostalgic, but not in a good way.
No, exactly, and the thing is, it's because we have completely looked lost after going a goal down in the last three matches that we've lost. And yet we've gone a goal down in pretty much all of the games that we've played this season, including a lot of victories, which is why it suddenly come under such scrutiny, and you wonder why the attitude has changed. You know, to come back from a goal down against MK Dons to get a point, against Wimbledon to get a point, against Oxford to win, against Charlton to win 4-1 in such convincing style, where's that gone? And is it the personnel? Is it because there's stuff going on behind the scenes? You know, as Chris says, we can speculate wildly on that, but it is very, very depressing to see us, you know, almost commit suicide in a way.
Most definitely, and a shake-up, I think, was needed, but perhaps the shake-up came in a different format to what we were all expecting. So I'll set the scene for you, boys. We've had the start, and now it's time for the main dessert, the main course. I was quite happily chilling at work today, idly browsing through my spreadsheets that I needed to sort out, and my phone pinged. Someone said, oh, what's going on with Sarsavić? I was like, well, I don't know what you're on about. You know, all I knew, obviously, is that he hadn't played on Tuesday, and that he was put in front of the press afterwards and you know, gave the usual sort of platitudes that footballers give. And that was about the last I thought of it ahead of Saturday. I thought, well, he'll definitely be back in the team, as will Doyle. You know, we'll see how we get on. But no, it appeared that news was breaking all across the internet that Sarsavić was leaving. It's in itself pretty shocking, given where we are in terms of the season, in terms of his status in the squad, but that he was leaving to join Stockport County of the Northern League, or National League, I should say. It came out of the complete blue for me. The rumours were non-existent, so boys, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but this was a complete and utter shock. A shake-up of the team most definitely was needed, but this is the last thing I suspected. Tom, what? I don't even know how to frame it. Where were you when you heard that Sarsavić was leaving League One Bolton Wanderers as captain and pretty much a permanent member of the team to join Stockport County on a free?
I was sat in my living room, idly, you know, trawling through some CVs while I was working, and just, you know, had that thing pop up on my phone from, I think it was Eddie actually, that alerted us to it, that Football League World or Football Insider, one of the two, had, you know, released a story saying that Stockport were putting the finishing touches on a deal for Sarsavić. And to be honest, they're right quite a lot of the time, but that just seems so outlandish. And one of the comments that I saw was, it's not April Fool's Day, lads, what are you playing at? And that's exactly how I felt, because it's just mad. James and I were saying before we went on air, you know, it's one of those things that you could not possibly have predicted this morning. If someone had told me that before it happened, I'd have rung up the insane asylum and booked them into a nice hotel suite there. It was just incredible. And what's more baffling about it is, as you say, no rumours whatsoever, no kind of inside information before this morning. And contracts don't come about that quickly. And tearing up of a contract doesn't come about that quickly either. You know, we see on deadline days where these kind of situations emerge, there's still a lot of planning that will have gone into those kinds of signings for them to get over the line in such quick fashion, or seemingly quick fashion. So if the reports of a potential bust up on Tuesday night are true, then this must have been in the works before then, surely. It doesn't get done in 3 days.
No, well, the hot rumours that I've been listening to and that I've heard one or two of is that this is a deal that was lined up for the end of the season. Stockport have got buckets of cash at the minute relative to their status. Sasevic would have been out of contract at the end of the year, and quite frankly, at the moment, wasn't playing himself into contention for a new one. And so when that bust up took place, a phone call was made and that deal was brought forward, you know, to the present day. James, without wanting to ask you the same question, Your response to the, your initial response to the news that Sasevic was leaving Wanderers, please.
Same as Tom, it was just one of those things where you're thinking, all right, what absolute muppet has just pulled this rumour out of his arse? But then you find out 2 hours later, Bolton officially put out a statement saying Sasevic has left for Stockport, and you're just thinking, what the bloody hell has happened in this timeline to lead to that? I pretty much, like Tom was echoing before, from our conversation off recording, this kind of thing can't have just happened in a couple of days if there was a bust up after Plymouth. I hadn't heard that rumour that apparently was lined up at the end of the season or end of summer or whatever it was. But yeah, these kind of things don't just happen in a few days. Either he's been consistently talking with Stockport over this period, or like you say, it was accelerated, or but how the hell does the captain of Bolton Wanderers move to a team two divisions lower than us in the 3 months into a season? That's the kind of comedy shit that you would see on Ted Lasso.
Didn't someone say that it was like someone moving from Arsenal to Accrington Stanley?
Yeah, exactly. You can see by my words how just confusing and baffling it is. So I can't even imagine what it's been like handling it behind the scenes.
No, and as someone who's never been particularly blown away by his performances on the pitch, the fact that he's left is neither here nor there. I think the story itself is what's more important in this sort of scenario. For him to be so integral and play every single game that he could play when fit last season, to then pretty much the same occurring this season, there was no inclination that he was anything other than a regular first teamer. And the fact that he was dropped on Plymouth was maybe Everett putting a statement out there, drops the assumption down, nobody's untouchable, don't care how important you were last season, how pally I am with you, everyone's got a fight for the place. And that sort of message, I think, is perfectly fair to give out after you've just been pumped 4-0 at home by your biggest rivals. If rumour be true and he has seen his arse after that, then quite frankly, he can go to Stockport with my blessing, because we're trying to build something bigger and better, and what we don't want is people in the squad in vital positions who would be happy to drop 4 divisions, 3 divisions, whatever it might be. You know, we should be looking up, should be looking forward. I think what you said, Tom, previously, it echoes my thoughts entirely. On our best day, we can beat anybody in the squad. What we probably need is people who have their best days more often than not, or have their better days more often than bad days. And unfortunately for me, I think I've seen Sasevic blow hot and cold far too often for him to be a player that I'm losing any sleep over leaving.
I've seen him play brilliantly once. I've seen him play brilliantly once, and that was the Crawley game, where you needed your captain to stand up and put in a proper performance, and he was utterly superb that day. And it was one of those things where, having signed him in the summer and seen far too often us having the likes of, you know, Jay Spearing and Jason Lowe in that kind of midfield central captain position, be blown away by other similar kind of players for other teams who then just take the game by the scruff of the neck and run it for them. I'd watched that too many times and thought that Sarcevic was going to come into us and be that bloke, and he wasn't that bloke until the final game of last season, frankly. As many as semi-decent performances, or the ability to do the Kevin Nolan thing and be anonymous and pop up with a goal, it doesn't really cut it for me if you're only going to play one really, really good game in the 50-odd that he played for us. And this is the thing, people are going to get on his back because he is that kind of player who, as you say, does blow hot and cold and can do the exceptional whilst also being totally anonymous. And that cuts it in League Two and National League. But he's been found out when he got promoted with both with Fleetwood and Plymouth before at League One level. And despite having a reasonable start in terms of goal output, he's been found out again at this level. And I think he's probably decided that he wants to go somewhere else where he doesn't need to deal with the pressure, doesn't need to deal with the hassle, and can go and have a reasonable career on a good wage at a club that's, you know, close to him, and that's absolutely fine. But frankly, you don't. If your manager and your captain fall out to the degree that we believe they must have fallen out for this move to have happened so quickly, then he can't be in the dressing room anymore. Simple as that.
Totally agree. And James, I think I'll come to you in a second just on your opinion of the impact this will have on the remaining fixtures and on the midfield. But a stat that's been shared widely tonight, I'll just bring to your attention, Tom, before I do move on, that with Sarcevic, he's played 44, we won 17, lost 17, win percentage of just shy of 39%. Without Sarcevic, played 23, won 14 and lost only 5, so a win percentage of almost 61%. That startled me a little bit. I didn't think he'd missed 23 games. But that just goes to show that out of the sort of 70 games he's played for Wanderers overall, he's missed nearly a third through injury.
Yeah, and I think we noticed last season there were times when he was sort of playing through the pain. He played through the pain in the Wigan game and it showed in his performance. You know, he is getting towards that age where, you know, these niggles do become a little bit more problematic. And, you know, I'm looking at that stat now and it does confirm kind of what we've been saying and that we do look potentially a more fluid outfit, certainly in the midfield when he's not there. You know, James and I said before we started recording that while a midfield three of William, Sheehan and Lee, you know, there's a propensity for Sheehan and Lee to get in each other's way in that kind of midfield, whereas Sarcevic plays a completely different role and therefore doesn't necessarily occupy the same space. But I don't think he's got the necessary skills on the ball, nor, you know, the actual positional sense to play the role that Everett was trying to get him to play. And he would pop up over the course of this season with, you know, 7 to 10 goals of that, I have absolutely no doubt, playing in a quite attacking side. But I think we'd lose more than we win because it just sort of set the balance out of whack. And I think those stats reflect that.
Very much so, very much so. So you've commented then on the remaining players left behind, and we'll throw Thomason in the mix there. Up to January, because quite frankly we don't have anyone else that we can register between now and then. But James, now Sarcevic is gone, 100% confirmed he's gone. What's your ideal midfield looking like? Is it a three? Do we go four and play two up front? What would you do if you were in a hot seat?
Personally, I don't think we're really in the, unless something's been worked on the training ground, I don't think we're in the position to change formation from the midfield three. So I'd have to stick with the MJ, Lee and Sheehan thing, although I would be tempted to try Thomason in that position. Or maybe in December when Darcy's back from his loan, maybe try him in one of those positions. But yeah, it's just the timing more than anything, isn't it? It's just incredibly bad timing, especially when we've got Tut out for at least another 2 months, so so that's already down to 4 centre mids. And Lee can be injury prone. Sheehan hasn't really kicked on from his great start to the season. Thomason's barely played first team football this season. MJ's really been the only consistent player in that team. So it's just incredibly, incredibly bad timing. But I didn't see the other side of that stat. I saw the first one where when he played it was 17, 12, 17 or something like that. But without him, I didn't think our win percentage was that high. Maybe it's flattered a bit because I know he was injured for a fair amount of games during our
the first half of last season. Yeah, exactly. So he was out when we were playing our best. Whether the two are connected or not, you can draw your own conclusion.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it just might be inflated by the fact that we just completely revamped our team and with great quality players for that level. But still, even without that, maybe it will be a blessing in disguise. Maybe we can getting an even better midfielder in January, or like say either Thomason or Darcy steps up in his place, or we change formation and adapt. I honestly can't really say right now. We'll probably have a better idea after the Gillingham game or the game after what that kind of plan is. But
yeah.
As for right now, well, all I can really hope is that it just works out for all parties involved.
Yeah, we've got a game coming up on Saturday, so we'll soon find out what that revamped midfield looks like. But a side effect to this has obviously necessitated a change in captaincy. So, Tom, are you happy with the decision to go with Santos? Personally, if I may say, I think Williams or Lee might have been my choice. But that's only based on spurious assumptions about Santos' character from seeing him play a few times in the flesh. Mm-hmm. But does that sort of thing bother you? Do you think Santos might be a good choice? Think it might bring out the best in him?
It's one of those, isn't it? You don't know until you try. If memory serves, he captained the side a couple of times last year in Sarcevic's absence. I think also during that period when Doyle wasn't there, or maybe Baptiste got the armband, it might just be making that up. But yeah, you know, having a commanding centre-half as your skipper has worked for a lot of very successful sides. I don't necessarily get the massive leadership qualities from Rico, because I think he's that kind of Rio Ferdinand defender who's either exceptional or doesn't know, you know, his arse from his elbow, which is my main concern. In terms of levels of consistency, Williams has got to be up there, but again, he doesn't strike me as maybe like the leader type. You know, don't get me wrong, you don't need to be a baller and a shouter to be a leader in a team, but I think given that he's been the person who's probably not had a poor game all season, maybe giving him the captaincy might mess that up, like it tends to do with England cricket captains. And Lee, again, been there and done it, but isn't necessarily the kind of bloke who strikes you as a leader, and also isn't necessarily going to be fit every single week, which I think therein lies the issue here. It's all well and good us saying, as we have done, that starting 11, including that midfield three of Sheehan, Williams and Lee, could be exceptional. Lee's not going to be able to do that week in, week out. He's of the Wes Houlihan mould, albeit, you know, 5 years younger, but with the amount of injuries he's had, probably similar kind of situation in terms of his legs having gone. So your skipper's got to be one of the people whose first name on the team sheet, which probably helps with Sarcevic going, because there has to be an argument as to whether he should have been one of the first names on the team sheet.
Certainly removes that conversation, doesn't it, from the agenda. So time will tell, and we'll see. Yeah, we'll see come Saturday what sort of influence a change in leadership has on the pitch. But in respect to going forward then, James, we've got the transfer window more or less, well, kind of coming on the horizon, shall we say, a little bit. We're still a couple of months away, obviously, but In terms of replacing Sarcevic, we've got zero options between now and then, what with Darcy, Politic, etc. being out on loan. But do you look for new blood, or do you look for reinforcements elsewhere on the pitch, or a new striker, for example, and then use loan recalls, which I assume exist, on Darcy and Politic, and reintegrate those guys into the team?
Well, Darcy's going to be back from his loan in November anyway, because Norway's season ends then because of the winter.
Ah, okay.
So we'll have him back early anyway. The Politic situation is interesting, because obviously he's not signed his extension yet. But I think with this kind of situation and how we might struggle from here a bit on out, we'll see. But I would just offer him the extra money and bring him back in January anyway. Yeah. That's just me. But I've heard that we might be in for Anthony Hartigan from AFC Wimbledon to replace Sarcevic in January. So we'll see if that pans out.
There was a link. When was that link? That was about a month ago, wasn't it, when that first came out, I thought.
Never heard of him.
Yeah, I remember that being a summer link in the summer.
It was a Nixon story, wasn't it? Was it a Nixon story?
I think so. So yeah, whether that gets brought back up again, we'll see. But we definitely need at least one body in midfield, just to cover numbers, at the very least.
Yeah.
But I'd agree that we should get a new striker in anyway, because right now Kachunga ain't doing it. Delfonso doesn't seem to be getting a sniff, and Bakayoko, purely based on his performances against Wigan and Plymouth, probably should not be in the team either. At the moment.
That's mad, isn't it, though? That's mad. I mean, don't get me wrong, I was not happy when we originally signed him, because I just looked at his goal record and thought, what the hell's the point? And he proved me wrong in those first couple of games that he played, because he just looked like, well, he looked like an animal, didn't he? He was just so driven.
Yeah, maybe his injury just completely disrupted him, because he was in good-looking form. I was hoping that form had continued, though, when he scored two against Liverpool's kids, but the context there is that it's Liverpool's kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's easy for you to bully people when you're twice the size of the player on the pitch. So, yeah. I don't know. Hopefully someone will come to form between then and January. Doyle starts scoring again, or, you know, someone just starts bagging. Dapo starts bagging again, or someone. But it's no one's going to deny that between now and January, it's going to be a tough couple. It's going to be a tough couple of months.
I don't know whether or not it's the big impact that he leaves on the pitch as opposed to off it, because not only is he clearly a big personality there, but what kind of precedent does it set? That even if this move was in the works for, you know, a while beforehand, as Chris, you've alluded to, your captain slags off the manager, there's a bit of a bust-up, you know, we're assuming that there was nothing overly violent there, you know, or maybe it was, I don't know. But, you know, Rico walking into that captaincy job knows now that if he speaks out against the manager, he could be out the door within a few days. Like, it's just, that might be an extreme example, but it is an odd precedent to be setting, especially given where he's gone to.
100%, and it's one of those ones, isn't it, where we can look to see if the truth of the matter comes out in the wash. But between us all, I think we'll probably agree that it's more important we look forward and we start getting results on the pitch, because
100%.
Although the situation's not desperate, we are mid table. We're not flirting with relegation by any stretch after 13, 14 games. But we're on a
downward spiral at the moment, at the very least.
We are. We're only a couple of other losses on the trot for the usual sort of murmurs to start coming out about the manager's future, for example. But Gillingham, we face tomorrow. They've only won 3 out of 14 all season, so I think we all know what that means. 100% we're going to lose tomorrow.
Welcome to Bolton.
Indeed. I've had a quick gander through Gillingham's squad. There's not many players I recognise in there. Funnily enough, Reece Bennett's there, who were recognised from Bolton Wanderers days of old. So that'd be nice to see how he's getting on. He was a really highly rated prospect back in his day, and it never quite worked out for him. But Tom, what do you think? How do you think the game's going to go? What, give us a score prediction.
I mean, they're there for the taking, but then again, so are we, given the current circumstances and our current form. We're at home. You'd like to think that we'd come away with a 2-0 comfortable win, but I honestly don't know. This has made tomorrow's game a massive, massive unknown. And if, you know, I were a betting man and I was seeing the odds that Sky Bet were offering on Gillingham, which I think was something like 4-1 to win tomorrow, that's worth a fiver.
Interesting. For myself, again, I you know, as of 9 o'clock this morning, I was quietly confident that we'd come back roaring, and that the lads, I'd have something to prove. But now I'm starting to wonder whether that's the wisest thing in the world. But James, for yourself, give us a score prediction.
From what I've heard, Gillingham are, you know, the bully up front kind of team, because they got Vidane and Oliver up front. So, so you'd think that we'd hopefully counter that by playing more on the ball. But the problem is, like we were saying before, we're heavily out of form. We've been fanning around too much with that possession based style, and So either we get a resurgence from Rico being captain, or we just continue our plummeting down the league. So, but I want to try and be confident about this. So I'm gonna go for a 2-1 win to Bolton. You know, give us maybe this is the kick up the arse we need. I really hope it is. Otherwise, we're just gonna look like a riot mug. Hopefully,
whatever. It can be hugely toxic as well. Yeah. It can be hugely toxic.
Oh, this ain't going to be toxic, mate. Toxic is when we play Stockport on the 7th.
Oh, you've stolen my closing lines. I really look forward to the FA Cup in a couple of weeks. But as an aside, Skybet have currently got 10-1, both a 0-0 draw and a 1-0 away victory, depending on how brave you think it might be. I think the 0-0 might be looking tasty for a couple of quid from my perspective.
Mm-hmm. Maybe. But I agree with you, though, James. You know, they're going to clearly, as they have done, hoof it up to Vidane and Oliver and see how it works. We've been bullied the last two games, to be honest with you, and that could well play into their favour. We're undoubtedly got more quality in our side, but quality doesn't mean not anything if you haven't got a fight in you, and that very much depends on whether
can motivate them. I don't put Dane Oliver at the same level as Charlie White and Will Keane and all that. And like,
I'd say Dane Oliver's better than Charlie White, mate. Charlie White's a donkey.
Well, the game will be a matter of hours away by the time you hopefully get this in your earworms, guys, and it's going to be one of those ones where we sink or swim. And fingers crossed we can pull that back, because it would seem such a shame to let events off the pitch derail what we've achieved so far this season, which is certainly nothing to be sniffed at. But we will see. This is Bolton Wanderers. Absolutely anything could happen. You know, the predictions are 0-0, could end up being a 5-0. I won't say which way I think it might go, but you just never know with the Whites, do you? But on that basis, fellas, I think we've discussed this one to death, and I'm grateful for you joining me at this time on a Friday night. And forgive me for being ever so slightly late to the podcast that I actually was the one that arranged in the first place. So thank you very much for joining me on a Friday night, guys. It's been brilliant. And as always, you can find us at the Lion of Vienna STE on Twitter. The BWSC hashtag has been absolutely on fire today, so I'm going to go downstairs, open a beer, and spend a bit of time reading it and shaking my head. So join us next time as we, the Lion of Vienna Suite podcast boys, discuss everything in the weird, wild, and wonderful world of Bolton Wanderers. Good night.